IVM.
Welcome to The Origin of Things. Episode 32. The Dark Past of Something Bright. The year 1940. The place, Germany. Oh wait, early 1940s, Germany. Not the most cheerful of starts to a toot episode, but I promise you it gets happier. Max Keith was a German businessman who was the head of the German division of an American medicine company. Actually, he was German, so the surname Keith, K-E-I-T-H, was pronounced Kite, K-I-T-E. Max Kite, which is how I shall refer to him for the rest of this episode. The American medicine company that he worked for really didn't have too much of an issue trading ethics for retaining German business. Why, they even sponsored the 1936 Berlin Olympics, placing their logo next to the swastika. Why, when Hitler's troops marched all over Europe, Herr Kite followed, setting up little subsidiaries everywhere, playing down the American roots. From Atlas Obscura, Kite was an imposing figure, tall, intimidating, possessing a little whisk broom moustache, not unlike Hitler's, charming but quick-tempered and utterly devoted to the company. Then Pearl Harbor happened in 1941, meaning that the US was now officially in the war, which meant that ties from headquarters had to be cut off with the German subsidiary, which meant there was an Allied blockade, which meant the American headquarters couldn't send vital ingredients over to the German division, meaning the latter could no longer manufacture products. Indeed, the very few supplies that they did have were reserved for American soldiers. And indeed, the Reich itself threw out enemy-owned companies like GM and IBM, and indeed, I do use the word indeed a lot. So he just decided to make his own formulation for the German market. Without permission from headquarters. It wasn't for lack of trying. He even went to the neutral ground of Switzerland to try and get in touch with his American bosses, but to no avail. He figured that making an unauthorized alternative and keeping the plant going would be preferable to losing the plant altogether, especially to those naughty Nazis. Then came the issue of what to make. Well, he had to use ingredients found in Germany at the time, and he ended up using what he would later describe as leftovers of leftovers. It was the product of a fair bit of imagination. It was also quite far away from the form that we know it today as. The product itself was a hit in Germany, made by, as a later memoir of the company would put it, a mix of ex-convicts, Chinese laborers, and other workers. After the war was over, a relieved Max was all too happy to hand over the rights and profits of the parent company in the US, which, by the way, had made a large fortune formulating and selling their original medicine since 1886. The company, however, was not too keen on continuing the product after the war and dropped it from their roster, and we might not have had it today but for their primary rival. Yes, their rival launched a series of products leading our company to retaliate. And one of the beneficiaries was the products that Max developed, brought out of obscurity back into the open and indeed onto world domination. Indeed, is the second most popular product of its type, only beaten by its own parent company's flagship product. A flagship product that is worth a good portion of the $193 billion that the company was valued at the time of recording. That compares favorably with the other giants of the pharmaceutical space. Pfizer at $187 billion, Roche at $286 billion, Novartis at $202 billion. So clearly, we're not talking about a small fry here. The difference, though, is that our company, the one that Max worked for, is no longer into pharmaceutical products, really. Yes, its first product was a tonic for headaches, indigestion, nerve disorders, and to treat morphine addiction, which is why it itself had a seemingly innocuous ingredient. Cocaine. Yes, its two primary ingredients were cocaine and caffeine, which came respectively from the coca leaf and the cola nut. Together, they gave the product its name, and you've guessed what that is, Coca-Cola. Soon thereafter, the company, to quote Wikipedia, has used a cocaine-free coca leaf extract. Today, that extract is prepared at the Stepan Company plant in Maywood, New Jersey, the only manufacturing plant authorized by the federal government to import and process coca leaves, which it obtains from Peru and Bolivia. And it was a few years later that the Coca-Cola company established Coca-Cola Deutschland, which, thanks to the aforementioned embargo, was unable to import cola syrup from the US, leading to its then owner Max to formulate a drink with the aforementioned leftover of leftovers, beet sugar, whey, and apple pomace, later substituted with elderberries. The drink was discontinued following the war, but was reintroduced after Coca-Cola's main rival, I assume you know who I'm talking about, introduced many new drinks. The version we know today was actually manufactured in the land of the pizza, Naples, in Italy, when a bottling plant used oranges to make the version that you most likely know today, continuing with the original name with its now iconic bright color. Nobody inside Coca-Cola really seemed to care about the Nazi origin, so much so that in 2015, the company released a tone-deaf ad in Germany celebrating the drink's 75th birthday with an original formulation promising a return to the good old days and the feeling of those times. Ah, nostalgia. So yes, one of the most popular soft drinks in the world did have its origin in Nazi Germany. A name which came about when Max asked his team to brainstorm on a name and use their imagination, or fantasy in German, a drink called Fanta. Ah, the dark past of a bright drink. And funnily enough, the creator of the original medicine of the company, Coca-Cola, was a Confederate Army veteran himself. Remember how I said the CEO during Fanta's time placed the Coke logo next to the swastika? Indeed, Atlas Obscura continues referencing the author of a book outlining the company's history for Pendergrast, the author. There's little doubt that Keitt worked with the Nazis, but he sees Keitt as a corporate man rather than a Nazi ideologue. You could not do business inside of Nazi Germany unless you collaborated with them, says Pendergrast. There's no question that he was a Nazi collaborator, but he was not a member of the Nazi party. His allegiance was to Coca-Cola, not to Hitler. Ah, the murky past of some of today's most beloved brands, and I wonder whether that has any lessons for us today. I suppose I will have to use my fantasy, as the Germans might say, eh? See you next week with another Origin of Things story. If you like this podcast, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can listen to us and all our shows on the IVM podcast app or ivmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on social media. We are at IVM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to reach out to me, that's Chuck_Gopal on Twitter and Chuck of All Trades on Instagram. All links in the show notes of this episode. See you next week.